Hi, I'm Sammy Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Northern Supertone Show.
Thank you.
Talk Talk and the Rainbow from their fourth studio album called Spirit of Eden, and that was released in 1988 on Parlophone Records.
Yeah, and we're playing that because sadly Mark Hollis passed away yesterday. The funny thing is, well, it's not funny at all, but we were talking about him with a friend of ours called Aaron Clegg, who loves Talk Talk. He loves Mark Hollis and he was waiting for new material. And literally, we were just talking about the recording techniques that they used on that very album yesterday on Facebook, because we've been discussing it with the engineer from the album, Phil Brown, 2 weeks ago.
It's a bit surreal, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I messaged Phil this morning. He's really, really sad about it. And it's a terrible thing. I mean, he's 64, you know. And
that's no age, is it?
And he'd been out of the music business for 20 years, you know. He didn't actually record anything else because he just wanted to get out. He wanted to spend time with his family. So it's quite, you know, it's quite a beautiful story. And he's a very honourable guy. And he's hugely regarded, because this album was a commercial disaster at the time. They didn't want to release it, did they?
No.
You know, I mean, using all the, I've not looked at any of the notes. All I'm doing, I'm talking off the top of my head at the moment. Yeah,
really?
I'm working off the top of my head at the moment.
Okay.
All I do know is that Tim Freeze Green, who is the producer on this record, right? He actually was responsible for one of the Thomas Dolby albums.
Right.
He engineered or co-produced it with Thomas Dolby. And Blinded Me With Science, remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and also Tight Fit, The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Don't
so
say that.
His credibility, as far as I'm concerned, was resting in the bottom of the toilet bowl. But he definitely revived himself for this. Because, I mean, the whole Talk Talk thing, it was like a post-rock thing. It was mixing jazz and all those influences and... When we were talking to Phil about it the other week, he was saying that most of the time they were in the dark, almost complete darkness, and they couldn't see what they were doing. And he said it was such a long, drawn-out process. It was just like a... But it was an amazing experience, and, you know... And Phil's such a lovely bloke, isn't he? You know?
I know. That's the one thing. I mean, he's a legend in himself. He's recorded everyone. Led Zeppelin, he recorded All Along the Watchtower. He was on that session, wasn't he?
Yeah, Bob Marley and the Wailers, a lot of that stuff.
The guitar solo in Stairway to Heaven.
That's right, yeah.
So can you imagine? So we met up with Phil in London a couple of weeks ago, and I got to say, he was such great company. And what I loved about him is I loved his stories, but he also listened. And when we were talking about our passion, and you found out that you were kindred spirits, you've both got the same approach to recording, which was like, oh my goodness, you know, you're brothers and spiritual, musical kindreds.
He uses the Pro Tools or the digital medium as a tape machine.
Exactly.
Which is, yes.
So we were like kids, weren't we? We just had such a wonderful night. And you know, after you've had a great night with great company, and I remember getting on the tube and we were all on the tube together, and that's really when I enjoy London at its best. You've had a great night and you're on the tube and you're just giggling and it's great. So it was such a beautiful life experience, and I know we've got a new friend now. But when he was talking about recording in the dark, it's just a little bit, you know, when you read about it now, because of course Phil was talking about working with Mark and some sharing some of his stories, but that's true. It took over a year, apparently. They worked often in the darkness, and they were basically improvising. And it was long-form recordings they were doing, and then they would heavily edit it together to sort of compile an album from that.
Well, apparently the editing was a nightmare, because I think they used 224 track machines synced up. And then a Mitsubishi, which cleared us up some errors, because somebody said it was a Fairlight, but it's not. It was a Mitsubishi 32-track digital recorder that they used to put it down to the end, so... Wow.
It's weird though, you're right though. The first two albums, what it was they were compared more to like Duran Duran, and that's kind of when I knew them more.
Yeah, the original Talk Talk.
Exactly. But Mark's influences were kind of Miles Davis and John Coltrane and Claude Debussy, and you can see that coming out in the third and fourth album. So The Colour of Spring, it was their most commercially successful. And what happened is then they had enough money, and EMI gave them an open budget to record this album, Spirit of Eden.
Mm.
So they even banned their manager and the EMI executive from coming to the studio.
Well, that's a good idea.
So I was thinking, I mean, that's really cool. So I love that. I love the fact. And they were saying that Talk Talk's not your ordinary combo and requires sympathetic marketing, because they're not so much difficult as not obvious. And you've just got to find as many ways as possible to expose the music. And what I love about Mark Hollis is a quote. He said, "Before you play two notes, learn how to play one note. And don't play one note unless you've got a reason to play it.
Bop by the one and only Ramones. Now, that's a pop record.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
The energy is like, bang!
Incredible, you know? And Tommy Ramone, the drummer, actually produced, co-produced that. And he produced some of the other stuff as well, eventually just becoming the producer. But it was the band's debut single in February 1976 on Sire ABC Records in the USA. And funnily enough, listening to that, punk was just emerging in the UK as well. Now, you know, what happened there between both sides of the Atlantic? Because normally, it's unusual, you normally get one breaking first, but it was kind of thing, you know, because this is the essence of a punk pop song. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a perfect song.
How would you describe that then, when you mean the essence of punk? What does that mean to you?
Well, what it means a load of, I'd say blokes, but it's not blokes, you know, everybody, people, in a garage, bashing out three chords.
Yeah.
And actually
it's like
meaning
an attitude,
it
yeah.
With attitude, yeah.
Yeah.
But when I say it's a perfect pop song, you know, it's got hook in it, it's got the Britsky pop, and it's the whole thing about it. There's so many hooks in that song, you know, and that ridiculously just fuzz guitar. And I think they were using Mozarites, actually. So it's, you know, absolutely monstrously. But it's not powerful. It's just got attitude. It's, it jumps out with attitude, you know? And Joey, Johnny, Dee Dee and Tommy Ramone, I mean.
Well, I've only just found out they made those names up.
Of course.
They have just, ah, I was thinking, my God, are they like the Osmonds or something? Yeah. And then I look into it and I'm like, oh. But that was quite funny, actually. So, that, I mean, that's kind of cool. But they were formed in 1974 in New York. So that's, you know, they were mates. It's cool. I love that.
But, like, Sex Pistols were formed, you know, not long, about that same sort of time, because, you know, for them in 76. It's very interesting. And this is 92 on the Rolling Stone list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. And, you know, I can see that. But you compare that and the energy and directness with the detail and the atmosphere of the Talk Talk track before and the amount of time it took, you know, the first record and that whole album took over a year to make in the studio virtually all the time, virtually every day, yeah?
Yeah.
And this probably took about 10 minutes. I mean, you know, wow.
It's interesting, isn't it? What I love about the Ramones as well is that I didn't realise that they gigged their backsides off for 22 years. They performed 2,263 concerts.
Yeah, that lasted touring. About 15 minutes. Because that was 2 minutes long. 20 songs. No guitar solos there, boys and girls.
started walking out. They started turning, my eyes were half open, but she didn't see me there. We ran along, walking across the rooftops in my chair. Had a car in my pocket and we started moving. A man in a helmet said, "Was that you using?" My eyes were half open, but he didn't see him there. In my pocket and I'm still here in my chair. My teeth were laughing now, we couldn't stop smiling. To the mystery band without even trying. My eyes were half open, but we didn't see him there. We ran along, walking across the rooftops in my chair.
Who else could it be but Status Quo and In My Chair? And that was released as a single on the 23rd of October in 1970 on the Pi record label.
What I didn't know about this, it was only released as a single.
It was.
And I thought it was like on Piledriver or those, but it wasn't. It's 1960. And it, but you know what I love about this? Because we've gone from the beautiful mystery of Talk Talk, we've gone to the Ramones, right, from 76, and now we're back in 1970 with a song that was written again in an afternoon that sounded like it was just recorded in 20 minutes, 25 minutes, a couple of takes, you know. There's a bit of a clumsy edit towards the end there, you know, when they put the go up to the four chord again, but, you know, it's all good. But Francis Rossi, you know, really... And I'm sorry, Francis, I've never been a great fan of your guitar playing, actually, from a style point of view, but you write some great guitar lines. And that, yeah. Da-da-da-da, bebop, ba-da-da-da-da-da, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful, you know, which goes to show, you know, that right what Mark Hollis said at the beginning, he said that, you know, learn to play one. Well, you know, Rossi doesn't play a load of notes. He just plays a couple, but it's got a great groove and it's just dirty and swampy, and it's that fuzz. He's got fuzz on there, an early colour tone fuzz bender thing, and it's just going, you know, the fuzz is crackling. He's using some old, I don't know, valve amp, they're probably the same size. I don't know, that's what they used to use. But marvellous, and produced by John Schroeder, who also produced Pictures of Matchstick Men, which was the first single. Right. And that's all I know about it. There you are.
Right. Well, I tell you what, though, Status Quo, all I can say is they just make you smile, don't they?
Of course they do.
They put a spring in your step, literally, and yeah, a smile on your face.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's fun music, and a lot of people misinterpret Status Quo because of the stuff they did later on, you know. Mm. But, you know, as far as, and we've had them on a few times now on the show, and as far as excitement goes at a live gig, you never seen anything like it, you know. And it's just like, it was like AC/DC before AC/DC.
I know you're leaving, it's too long overdue. For far too long, I've had nothing new to shout to you. Goodbye, dry eyes, I watched your plane fade off west of the moon. And it felt so strange to walk away alone. There's no regrets, no tears goodbye. I don't want you back. We'd only cry again. Say goodbye again. The hours that were yours echo like empty rooms. The thoughts we used to share I now keep alone. I woke last night and spoke to you, not thinking you were gone. And it felt so strange to lie awake alone. There's no regrets, no tears goodbye. I don't want you back. We'd only cry again. Say goodbye again. Our friends to try to turn my nights to day. Strange faces, a new place, can't keep the ghosts away. Now just beyond the darkest hour, and just behind the dawn, it still feels so strange to leave my life alone. There's no regrets, no tears goodbye. I don't want you back. We'd only cry. Say goodbye again. No regrets, no tears goodbye. I don't want you back. We'd only cry again. Say goodbye.
Walker Brothers, No Regrets, from their fourth studio album, No Regrets, released on October 1975 on the British label GTO and Jem Toby Organisation.
I didn't know what that was, that's why I put it there, GTO. I'd never heard of them before.
Neither have I.
So it's quite interesting, really.
I'm not really
it's
interested.
British.
You know why?
Why?
Because Scott Walker.
There's no regrets.
Hey, what a voice. What a performance. And, you know, I know this is sort of Radio 2 material, but we have it in our record collection. It's a vinyl and it deserves to be played.
It's a classic.
And, of course, on that, the dulcet tones of our good friend, who? BJ Cole on pedal steel there, who played on the knife. Yeah, so we know BJ, he's a good man, lovely fella. Really cool. And, of course, that magnificent guitar solo by Alan Parker, an acoustic guitar as well. Great. Less to be said, however, about the bass player, Daryl Runswick, who clearly was on amphetamines when he recorded that, because he was dancing over the fingerboard like Nijinsky. No, Daryl. Of course, it's a classic song. You can't criticise it, but it's very busy, isn't it?
I know. I've played it a few times, and it's like, and you kind of go, okay. I mean, there's some really nice moments in it, but you're right. It's busy.
Yeah, it really is. But I mean, Tom Rush wrote it.
Yeah,
marvellous song. Recorded at Marquee Studios, Kingsway Recorders, and Air, of course, which is George Martin's place.
Yeah.
And what I didn't realise about that, it was so late, because I always think of Scott Walker and the Walker Brothers, like in the
60s. Yeah.
But this was the first time, you know, and it, did it get a bit of a slating by the cricket critics?
The cricket. Well, yeah, it was. I mean, they'd not had a hit since 1967, so this was their comeback single in 1975, because their last hit was Walking in the Rain, and in fact, this was their last commercially successful record that they released. But what was, I mean, it's not, I mean, some people said it was brilliant, others said it was a gargantuan slab of maudlin sadness that wrung every last iota of pain from Scott's voice. And then a journalist at All Music just said, it stunk.
No, I think it was mad, I think, is the word you're looking for.
No.
A stunk, was it?
Yeah. It stinks.
No.
So, well, yeah, I mean, just said it stinks. I mean, it's funny, though, because I think you can misinterpret the emotion of that song. You're either totally in it or you're not. I mean, this is a classic song. It's been recorded by other great musicians like Shirley Bassey, Emmylou Harris, Midge Ewell.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Mark Cleese is listening. There we
exactly.
are.
Exactly. Yeah. And also Olivia Newton-John.
No.
So, I mean, a wide spectrum of musicians from all different genres have recorded this. So this song does sort of cross over quite beautifully, I think. I think it's a beautiful song. It just depends how you sing it.
Well, we really love Scott Walker. We love Scott because, I mean, and all his solo stuff, we've got every record, and it becomes gradually more bizarre, and Jack Burrell sort of influenced, isn't it, really? And it moves on. And the latest stuff, I mean, that documentary on him is absolutely incredible. What an incredible documentary. He's one of those guys that he just seems to have got better as he's got older, and he's doing different stuff, and it's taking longer and longer. But Ed Horrocks, who runs 4AD, used to play guitar in the band The Disciples with me, and stuff. Hello, Ed.
It's a great story, that. I mean, it's lovely because we're all human beings. It's great the way our stories evolve and we end up at different places, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, he's on that label and he's, you know, he's still doing great stuff. So well done 4AD for supporting him, and well done, Scott, for being beautiful.
It's too dark. I'm coming home.
start for a while. Don't believe I'll be going back that way. Think I'll roll another number for the road. I feel able to get under any load. Though my feet aren't on the ground, I've been standing on the sound of some open-hearted people going down.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Thank you.
And that was Neil Young and Roll Another Number for the Road from the live album Roxy, Tonight's the Night. And that was released very recently, actually, on the 24th of April in 2018.
Yeah, I remember when that came out and we grabbed a hold of it straight away and had a good old listen. Marvellous. Niels Lofgren's on that, you know. Niels Lofgren, I should say, on guitar and piano, which is cool.
Yeah.
Billy Talbot on bass, of course, his long-term bass player. Marvellous fella. You know, he always looks like he's sort of just so cool, you know. And Ralph Molina on drums. And David Briggs produced that originally. But he sadly passed away. You know, I think 95, was it? Who was his long-term collaborator Crazy Horse and stuff.
Yeah.
But what I want to know is how can you get a lyric like hood ornament in your song? That is a great, because hood ornament, it's sort of the most, but he's saying what he wants to say without any thought of rhyme or whatever, but it's beautiful. It just sort of sticks out, you know?
Well, you like singing this with a bit of a laugh, don't you? You just go into it sometimes. It's really funny, but I love it. And you do the accent really well.
Yeah.
But I want to know what it is, because, you know, Neil Young, it's just something about him. He's such a pain in the ass sometimes, because, I mean, he's troublesome, which I do love, because when you see him play, he's got attitude. And there's like this electrifying lightning with him. It comes from nowhere sometimes, isn't it? He just suddenly goes bang, and that's it. I mean, and yet for a man like that, he's so emotional and so thoughtful and so caring. I mean, he's quite amazing, really.
Well, when we saw a documentary, he's very hard. What he said, it's all about the music. And he's let a lot of people down. He's really messed about with the careers and stuff and been right pain in the neck, you know, for a lot of time. But he says it's all about the music. And that's all you can say, you know. It's remarkable. But what I find very interesting about him is the juxtaposition between that country and that very acoustic side. Because, and we haven't played it yet, but I want to put it in the show at some stage. And it's a song off one of his later albums, Silver and Gold. And it makes me cry. It is just gorgeous, and it's just him and an acoustic guitar. And he goes from that to something like Cortez the Killer or Hurricane with these massive, crunching guitar solos, a monstrously powerful sound, you know? And to get that, you know, that sort of spectrum, what an artist. It's just fantastic.
And what I like about him as well, do you remember when I read about the fact that he only records like 3 days a month up to the full moon?
That's right, yeah.
Ooh. Oh. Ooh.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end. No safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your eyes again. Can you picture what will be so limitless and free? Of some stranger's hand in a desperate land. Lost in a romance, wilderness of pain, and all the children are insane. Older children are. Inside the gold mine.
snake, ride the snake to the lake, the ancient lake, baby. The snake is long, 7 miles. Ride the snake, he's old and his skin is cold. The West is the best. The West is the best. Get here and we'll do the rest. The blue bus is calling us. The blue bus is calling us. Driver, where you taking us? The killer awoke before dawn. He put his boots on. He took a face from the ancient gallery and he walked on down the hall. He went into the room where his sister lived and then he paid a visit to his brother and then he walked on down the hall and he came to a door and he looked inside Father, yes son, I want to kill you. Mother, I want to. Come on, baby, take a chance with us. Come on, baby, take a chance with us. Come on, baby, take a chance with us and meet me at the back of the blue bus. Do not blue rock on that blue bus. We'll be right back.
This is the end. Beautiful friend. This is the end. My only friend, the end. It hurts to set you free, but you'll never follow me. The end of laughter and soft lies. The end of nights we try to die. This is the end.
The Doors. The End, from their debut album, The Doors, released on the 4th of January 1967 on the Elektra record label.
1967. That's a long time ago.
Well, it is, but it sounds as fresh as a daisy. Improvisation towards the end there is magnificent, and the only thing that I can think of, the only thing I can think of is Apocalypse Now, when, because the visual representation of that song is Apocalypse Now. It's just amazing, you know. When you see, you know, Captain Willard, i.e. Martin Sheen, and that Colonel Kurtz with Marlon Brando, of course.
Yeah.
And the thing about Marlon Brando at that point, I don't know if you noticed, but he'd got so big, he didn't want to be filmed in that film, and Scorsese actually got him to do it only on the basis that you could hardly see him, and it adds so much atmosphere. And all you see is just very small, you know, it's so dark and so mysterious and so incredibly atmospheric. You know, I mean, it's one of my favourite films, Apocalypse Now. But this song is just magnificently, what's the word? It just fits hand in glove with that atmosphere.
Yeah. You know, I've read about what people say it's about, you know, the Oedipus Rex complex or something, that is some Greek theatre that he was studying when he was at uni and stuff. But I don't even want to think about the words of that, because the feel, what do you say, is right, with the visuals of that film and the feel of the song and... Well, it's just so powerful. I can hardly speak because I just feel stunned, I think, is the word.
Well, what I do love about it is the detail. Rather, going right back to Talk again at the beginning, there's that little bit, you know, where Robbie Craig is just actually, he's playing behind the nut or behind the bridge of the guitar, and you get ding, 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 and at the end, he just bends the guitar just a little bit and he spins it up. But the whole thing, it's either use a tram arm or he's bending the neck, and it's just detail. But, you know, you do not get songs like this anymore. You do not get recordings like this anymore because, you know, people are not allowed enough time in the studio to this, because this was a jam. You can hear it.
Yeah.
You know, it's jam. And was it, did they say it was taken from two takes and joined together or something?
Yeah, they say that there were two takes taken, and rumour has it that either the second take was used or that the two takes and there was one splice. But regardless of that, I mean, a lot of the contemporary bands of today are going, oh, you know, let's just do 8 bars of the chorus, and they do it in blocks. It's completely detached. There's no heartbeat to it, whatever. I mean, this is just a masterpiece of sonic exploration. And, I mean, you can almost see like a big elephant falling down the stairs, crashing into everything. You know, you can see, you can feel carpets flying. You can, you know, almost at the end, you know, that guitar, it's almost like time space shifts, as if you're going into some sort of parallel universe. I mean, it evokes other amazing images aside from, if you haven't seen Apocalypse Now, you know, and you're not into that sort of film, it's just and he was so intense with the recording process. He so wanted to convey the feel, and yet he didn't really know what it was about when you look at the interviews. And I quite like that, because that's up to you.
Didn't Jim write the lyrics about breaking up with his girlfriend, Mary Warbelow?
Well, they, in one interview, it was like, yes, maybe. He says maybe it was about a girl, but it's, he says he doesn't really know. It's more than that. He hasn't...
Well, towards the end, I think it sort of... kind of started off that way, but it sort of morphed into something else. Because they used to jam it a lot, the Whiskey A Go Go, and I think it became like one of their big things, you know, in the live show, you know.
And he was using, and a lot of what happened as well is that he was using a lot of expletives and the F word, but he was repeating that, and he was using it as a rhythmical instrument. So he was experimenting with words as rhythm as well as using, because your voice is an instrument.
Absolutely.
Just happens to, you know, you're just born with it. You don't have to go down the road and buy it from, you know, Gretsch or someone.
Well, the interesting thing about Paul A. Rothchild, who actually produced it, he'd worked with Janis Joplin, Kris Kristofferson, me and Bobby McGee, remember that?
Yeah.
John Sebastian, Neil Young, Tom Rush, you know, basically the guy who wrote No Regrets. So all this is tied up to them. We didn't realise that.
No,
you know,
it's odd, isn't it?
When you look into the research, you know, because we had Neil Young, we had Scott Walker and Paul A. Rothchild, who produced this, so it ties it all together. Really odd, you know. And it's recorded at Sunset Sound, which is, you know, been responsible for loads of tracks over the years. Prince's Purple Rain, I think it's Guns N' Roses have done stuff. I mean, it's an amazing recording. But again, it's all to do with the time that a record company will allow an artist to produce something magnificent. And perhaps they were just doing it. Perhaps it was quick, I don't know, you know, because they've been doing it a lot live.
Yeah.
But to create something of this depth and artistic magnitude requires time and a complete relaxed feel about the recording process. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and also sort of recording with gear that allows you to capture the heartbeat of a performance, and you're not sterilising it and trying to, you know, make it too perfect. That's it's the approach more than anything as well, isn't it? It's how you do it.
Well, totally. And I believe that the mix for the track on Apocalypse Now was different from the 1967 release.
Yeah.
And was remixed specifically. And apparently, the guy who asked for it, the sound designer, what was he called?
Walter.
Walter Murch, very good. He asked from the tapes, and they sent him the master tapes rather than just the stereo track.
Yeah, yeah.
So he managed to remix it, and apparently, well, some people say it sounds better, which, you know, I don't know. It's all.
I think what he did is he just put Jim's vocals higher in the mix, you see, up towards the crescendo part, because he wanted to hear that, and you can hear that more clearly in the film, and a lot of people prefer that kind of mix, being able to hear the vocals better.
Well, we're at the end of the show.
We are. I can't believe it. And we're recording the Supertone Show on the road.
Yeah, that's right. We're in north of England at the moment and soon to be moving to Germany. But that's it. So we will see you next time. Thank you very much.
Oh, and also, if you're in London as well, we're playing the Half Moon in Putney with the Starlight Camel Band on Wednesday the 6th of March, and also the Greystones on the 1st of March.